This is an AMI podcast.
Hey, Dave Brown here. If you enjoy this podcast portion of our show, remember you can watch it live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV.
Welcome back to the Now News Panel on AMI TV. I'm Alex Mythe, and I'm joined by Michelle McQuigg and Juita Gupta. Let's address our next topic. Debates around gun control seem to have coincided with a new news of more tragic mass shootings in the U.S., both here, and then there's also some in our country as well. This last week, two new proposed amendments to gun controls have stirred up a debate again in this country. The first proposed amendment would see the definition of an assault rifle added to a bill that was first introduced last year. The amendment proposes to ban a, quote, a firearm that is a rifle or shotgun that is capable of discharging centerfire ammunition in a semi-automatic manner that is designed to accept detachable cartridge magazines with a capacity greater than five cartridges of the type in which the firearm was originally designed. Very, very wordy. Essentially, it's proposing to ban almost all semi-automatic rifles. The other proposal provision will allow anyone to apply to a judge for an emergency order to prohibit someone who might cause harm, such as a stalker or abuser, from possessing firearms for up to 30 days. The identity of the person making the application may be kept confidential, and the matter can proceed in court without the gun order owner present. So, Michelle, this was your topic that you brought forth, two very big proposed amendments. Where did you want to go with this?
Yeah, well, thanks for laying out the the technical definition.
Very, very wordy.
It is very technical. It's very yes. in the weeds, and there's even more to it than that. But basically, the crux of the matter is that the definition of semiotic weapons has not necessarily been codified in law before, and there has been a push to do so, and that is one of the things that the government is hoping to do now with this gun control measure that they're trying to get passed. Big surprise, it's running into fierce opposition, primarily from the conservatives who feel that the government is coming after hunters and sportsmen and those who maintain guns for lawful reasons. And it's going along fairly predictable partisan lines that way. The other amendment is also interesting because it has victims groups raising concerns, saying, you know what, this might sound great on paper, but it actually is going to potentially undermine the people it serves to protect. People who are in domestic violence situations or in imminent danger don't have the time or resources to go to court necessarily. That itself is an act that could put them at additional risk. We know that domestic abusers, that during times when there's efforts to leave or to intervene in their behavior, that's when the risk is highest for the women and children and others and vulnerable people in those situations. So it's a controversial amendment on top of an already thorny bill that's been difficult to discuss and to pass. And yet it jumped out at me because we are having these conversations here and we're further down the road in terms of potentially implementing some meaningful gun control for those who feel that way than we have been in the States, where we see that this is an issue that just never, ever truly gets put to bed in any meaningful way. There have been a lot of mass shootings in the U.S. recently, of course, especially in the past week. Even last weekend, there was a really wretched shooting at a nightclub that was perceived to be a hate crime. So it's very topical. And I thought it would be time to check in a bit on where we stand here in Canada as we have some different but equally thorny conversations around this issue.
Absolutely, because and some of the responses I've read from these amendments, especially from the conservative parties, and especially those in Alberta and Saskatchewan, basically said they're just trying to get rid of guns altogether. They're trying to ban all guns. Now, that's based on the information.
Noting, really quickly, it's worth noting that the premiers of those three provinces you named have all now formally voiced their opposition in a joint statement about this. So it's not just the residents of those provinces. They're getting official pushback from the leaders now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, Juita, I want to go to you on this and find out, do you feel like this has always been a long-standing debate. Do you feel there is now an appetite to really tackle this head-on with this amendment that both politically and from a public standpoint, that people are ready to take this and change gun laws in Canada?
It's an excellent question. And we know that we've had, in recent memory, some very horrific mass shootings in Canada, the 2020 Nova Scotia shooting, the 2018 Toronto Danforth shooting, also in 2018, the Fredericton mass shooting. And I think there has been more interest, both from politicians and the public, to see greater gun control. But that doesn't necessarily shift the balance or change what's actually going to happen here. There's still a powerful gun lobby at work, not as well funded as the gun lobby in the U.S., but nonetheless quite an immutable and immovable force. You've still got hunters, of course, being a vocal minority. I was looking at a poll conducted by Angus Reid in May 2022, so it's a couple months old now. And according to the poll, about 60% of Canadians surveyed said that gun violence was increasing in Canada. And even so, in that same poll, only about 44% of Canadians say that gun control needs to be stronger. So is there an appetite for change? Obviously, those who are in favor of greater gun control will continue to lobby for that. But it doesn't really seem to be translating, the concern for of mass shootings doesn't really seem to be translating into broad-based consensus that we need to make some changes here, because you've got a lot of people either indifferent, and you've got a very vocal minority. And it's not just a minority, as Michelle pointed out. Now you've got the premiers of at least three provinces officially opposing it, and that is not an insignificant obstacle.
Yeah, well, and this goes back to the same struggles we see in so many different issues. This is a federal bill that they're trying to pass, and then you have the provincial jurisdictions who are already saying they are going to challenge this, and if they need to, they will go to court over these new laws. So you're getting that divide and that separation between federal and provincial ideologies.
If you don't mind me, but there's also another important divide where I think we need to consider the rural-urban divide in a conversation about gun control, whereby the proponents, whereby those who are against gun control are often in rural areas, whereas the victims of gun violence are often in the urban poor neighborhoods. And I think that division is really one of the and of course, they're not only are they in different places politically, but they're in different places geographically. And this is a big country. So they're never really meeting, not even in the most sort of just in the most obvious sense of the term, which is they're not ever sitting down face to face. So that is, I think, a big issue as well to consider, apart from the federal provincial issue that you brought up.
Absolutely. And Michelle, I want to go back to you because you did mention this a bit when we were talking about the red flag provision, the second one that could see people who feel threats to their life go to court and get a 30-day ban on someone who may be deemed as a threat to have a weapons taken away or a ban on them having weapons. Do you feel that the vulnerable groups and the groups that would be affected, you mentioned they did have they were vocalizing their opposition to this amendment. Ironically, most people would think this would be something that they would be in favor of. Do you think that they've had enough of their voice heard and considered with this provision?
I will say the jury's a little bit out on this one. They absolutely have been very much involved. By and large, they're quite supportive of the government's planned efforts on this front, and they largely like this bill. I do feel that by and large they've been heard, but this issue came up as part of a clause-by-clause review process, which is always an important time when passing government legislation to make some tweaks. The fact that we're even discussing this suggests to me that the message is being heard. This is a lobby that has gotten organized, that has been able to get this issue flagged and discussed. And to me, this is a classic example of something that a lot of us who navigate accessibility circles will be familiar with, something that sounds great on paper, but it really takes a lived experience to be like, you know what, like, yes, that sounds fine in theory, but the practical reality is very different, and here's what it actually looks like. So the reason the jury is out is because I will be interested to see how the government responds to these critiques about this particular clause now that they've been raised. If they decide to take some meaningful action, then I will probably come down with an unequivocal yes. But for now, I like to sort of see and wait and see how this plays out. But I will say that it's been quite evident that certain advocacy groups who are very much in favor of gun control, I'm thinking specifically of the group of survivors of the École Polytechnique massacre, one of the worst in our history, groups like them, several other women's shelter groups have had some pretty prominent exposure and say and input into this. So I don't feel the issue has been ignored. I will, though, be interested to see how they deal with some finer points now that they've had a chance to hear about it. Mm.
Joita, you had talked about the a bit of the divide. Do you feel like there is a nonpartisan, non-divisive way that we can have these types of conversations, that we can have everyone come to the table and have a meaningful conversation?
This, as I said before, it is an interesting divide. Just if you allow me a minute to talk about the vulnerable groups, whether they've been adequately consulted. Certainly, we've heard from women's groups in some detail, but we haven't actually heard from, as I mentioned, the urban poor community, and that's often the group that's most affected by gun violence, as the victims of gun violence, and that's a voice, at least as far as I can tell, that's conspicuously absent.
Great point.
So, you know, we know that there are some entrenched sides here. The people who are advocating against gun control tend to be in rural areas, hunters and sometimes farmers. And of course, those who are the victims are often the urban poor. We haven't really even heard from cities or community activists. And I think the role of the city is really important. So is there a way to reach a nonpartisan solution? It's an interesting idea to contemplate, because really all evidence points to the fact that you've got two very entrenched sides here, and they're not going to meet in the middle, either politically and obviously not geographically. However, you could really, if you were creative, think about finding ways to broach the difference or breach the difference. You could have a way of allowing rural people to use guns for hunting purposes, for example, while introducing greater restrictions in cities. I'm just, you know, spitballing ideas here. The problem with that is you don't really have a way of enforcing that in Canada. We have freedom of movement. That means guns can freely flow or move between rural and urban areas and even between provinces, as far as I know. So I can't really see how you might implement a situation where you have looser gun control regulations in rural areas, which allow for legal gun ownership, and maybe tighter regulations in the city where, you know, no one's hunting and no one has a farm. I just can't seem to find a way where you could logically find a consensus. And given that the issue is highly polarizing, as I've alluded to in the past, I don't know if we'll ever really arrive at a consensus here. I feel like it's one of those issues where one is eternally sort of looking for a solution that nobody will really be happy with.
Right. Yeah. Michelle, I'll give you the final word on this topic.
Yeah, I'll make this quick, but I tend to agree that a true consensus position will be very difficult to arrive at. Even broad spectrum satisfaction, I think, will be hard to land on. It's worth noting that the Liberal government is the one that has historically been the one that tries to thread the needle and find a middle course. And even now we're seeing this, where they're being attacked pretty hard from the right. The Conservatives are deeply opposed to this bill. The NDP, their ostensible allies, due to the confidence and supply agreement, they will support this bill, but they're also saying it doesn't nearly go far enough. They would like to see more action. So this, I think, is the best thing we're going to see in terms of someone trying to establish a middle course, and it's not proving to be a very smooth ride. I suspect there's more of this to come.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you both. We'll leave the conversation there.
Hey, Dave Brown here. If you enjoy this podcast portion of our show, remember you can watch it live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV.
Join us weekly for The Pulse with host Juita Gupta, who brings us closer to issues impacting the disability community across Canada. Watch The Pulse on YouTube or listen wherever you download your AMI podcasts.